Stephen.
Hello, Stephen, and how are you today?
Well, pretty good. I thought 2021 was going to be a slow news year, and it turns out it isn't. We've got lots going on.
Oh, I'm waiting to live in non-interesting times. This is, I mean, Trump has vanished from the scene, so we don't have that constant sort of Damocles dangling over our head as to what is he going to do now, and always worrying that it's going to be something that involves Canada or in some way impacts the rest of the world
Or
in
nuclear war, yeah.
We don't have that debt, hanging over our heads anymore, but we still have news happening all the time
From
that
unexpected sources.
and at an unexpected pace. It's hard to believe there was a time when 24-hour news had to put in a lot of fill.
Yep, those human interest stories of the dog that made it home after 2 years. Which was sort of headline news. And now it's like, oh, sorry, dog, you're not getting any press. We got all this other stuff to
Yeah, it, and the poor dog needs a better agent. Should
do.
have spent some of those 2 years researching agents. But we should start talking today. We talked months ago when this first arose about Governor General, now former Governor General Julie Payette, and what was turning into a tempest at the time, which spurred an investigation, saying that she was basically a lousy boss. She was strange and verbally abusive to her staff and spent money in odd ways. And a report came out which indicated, yeah,
It's
that's
all
true.
true.
I'm trying to remember what we said at the time as to where that was going to go.
I
Do you
actually,
recall?
I reposted it. Actually, I actually even listened to us. I'm one of our listeners, not just one of the participants.
I'm not just the president, I'm also a client.
And we talked about, the question is, is she actually toxic or is she just a nerd? And we kind of said a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B, because we talked about her being able to get along with people, obviously, because she was up in a space station,
Yeah.
which is pretty close quarters, and you get to know each other pretty intimately if you're pooping in a Ziploc bag. But I think where we arrived was that she basically doesn't like people. Whether it's shyness or something else, we're not quite sure, but she was really ill-suited for the role because the functionality of the Governor General is 90%, 95% meeting people. It's ceremonial. It's, I talked about some of our previous governors general, like Roland Michener, who just loved the role. He loved meeting people. He loved dressing up. He loved going to the dinners and chewing the whale blubber up in the north, and standing at attention and saluting on Remembrance Day. I mean, that is the job. And apparently those are all the things that Payette hated about the job.
Totally unsuited. I don't know what she thought the job was when she took it, or perhaps she wasn't very self-aware of her limitations and how that would impact her ability to do the job. But it turned into a, I don't even think we can call this a scandal, because it hasn't reached the levels that previous scandals have. And I think that's because, do you really think that Canadians care one way or the other about the Governor General? Because I don't think they really care.
It's not really high on Canadian consciousness. I mean, again, except for Remembrance Day and a couple of, when the Order of Canada is being handed out at Rideau Hall, it really doesn't enter our consciousness particularly. I mean, and the role is constitutionally important. There's a lot of people say, oh, we should just be getting rid of the Governor General at this point. Say, well, and replace it with what? A Republican system? What are you going to do? I mean, I think the crown, and maybe we should do a show on monarchy at some point. I'm not a particular monarchist, but the idea of the crown is it's something bigger than politics. It's impartial. It supposedly stands for justice and even-handedness, and it isn't partisan. And when you take your oath to the, I've taken, I've been thinking, I've been taking, I've taken several oaths to the Queen over the course of my professional career. And the idea is you're swearing to uphold something above petty party politics, and the crown is above it all, and it stands for all those noble things. I mean, especially now where, you know, the crown doesn't really have a lot of power itself, it's easy to idealize something that really can't hurt you too badly.
Well, it's a lot of traditional ceremony that is part of our heritage and which keeps us anchored to our heritage. I mean, the monarchy, for all that it's supposed to stand for the good in the world now, it took some time to get there.
Yeah, and it doesn't cost us that much money in the grand scheme of things. Everyone goes like, oh, you know, they're jutting around and living in Rideau Hall, or not living in Rideau Hall, as the case may be, with Payette. It isn't that big an expense. Anyway, the philosophical discussion about whether or not we need a governor general is kind of beside the point. I mean, the whole idea was, you know, this was supposed to be a great pick. I mean, sort of a trophy governor general, you know, an astronaut, a woman, a scientist. And at the time, if you go back, you know, there's a tweet for everything, not just in the Trump world, but, you know, O'Toole said, Aaron O'Toole said, you know, Payette, what a great choice. Even, you know, Jagmeet Singh said, great choice. Everyone at the time, you know, everyone's forgotten that they thought it was a great choice at the time because she seemed to check all the boxes, but no one checked the personality box, which is she suited emotionally suited to the job? And it turns out she just wasn't. And it was an open secret in Ottawa, especially anyone who worked closely with Rideau Hall, that, you know, she was moody, and she was, was subject to outbursts with her staff, and people knew this. And I can only assume that people tried to intervene as much as you can, because the governor general isn't just an employee. You can't just kind of call them in on the carpet and yell at them a bit. You can just give them some advice about, you know, what people are saying, because we've never removed a governor general before. And we, although in the King Bing affair, when the governor general, famously sided against William Lyon Mackenzie King, he lasted about a month after King finally came back into power after defying Bing and running an election on it. So he was retired almost immediately afterwards. So it's kind of hard to say that, you know, we've never gotten rid of a governor general before. But this is the first time.
Did we get rid of one now, or did she resign?
Well, she resigned. Yeah. And, no one has seen the report yet, but apparently it is scathing, and apparently it reflects all the things that you and I talked about back at the end of the summer, when the CBC first broke the insider story about emotionally abusive workplace Rideau Hall was. Rather than face that, she bowed out.
Yeah, I think, though, I mean, the writing was on the wall that this is one of those resignations that it's like, resign or we're going to
fire calling
you.
The queen. I'm calling the queen.
Yeah. And rather than have it blow up into something even more embarrassing, but have the same result, which is her out of office, she took the quieter way out. Now, do you think that this reflects upon the Trudeau government, that they rushed her in, that they didn't vet her properly, that she was a good show pony, and so they glanced over a lot of the vetting process that normally goes into a governor general? Or is that armchair, you know, Monday morning quarterbacking the program?
Well, you know, I think she could have been a good governor general. She wasn't. You hope that people rise to the occasion, but I think there were enough warning signs out there. I mean, they're, you know, what we've learned since. I mean, she went through a very acrimonious divorce, and there's all kinds of, you know, there was an assault charge laid against her by her ex-husband. There was, you know, there's actually not just a story. I mean, there was a case where she was involved in the the what do you call it? Well, it's vehicular manslaughter. It used to be, you know, someone was killed and she was driving the car. Mm-hmm. It was an accident in which a death resulted. And though, you know, I would have thought those sorts of things just on their own would be, you know, yeah, astronaut and all that stuff. But no, you know, that in any other job, you know, that would be a, you know, thanks for coming in, we'll let you know. At the end of the interview.
Yeah, and I wonder why they just looked at that and looked past it. I suppose, I mean, those things weren't raised when her name was first announced, nor when she was confirmed, nor in the time since. So it isn't that those stories were going to dog her while she was in office, because they didn't. So as far as that kind of prediction, they were right. They didn't come back to bite her in the ass. But what did is what she's doing now, never mind what she's done in the past. And, you know, like you said, an astronaut, they're disciplined, at least so we understand. They're very disciplined individuals. They have to work with people in very difficult circumstances, especially in the space station, you know, very high stress circumstances in very close quarters. I would think just from this resume that she would have a temperament suited to a job where you need some sense of discipline. And yet she seemed to dole out the discipline, but wasn't actually disciplined herself. And now Erin O'Toole is saying that the prime minister doesn't get to choose this governor general.
Oh, I saw that. Oh my God. And the theory is, and it is just a theory because I don't think there's any facts to back it up. The theory is that because there may be an election sometime in the future. I mean, there always is going to be an election sometime in the future because time is linear and we have elections. it's like there is going to be an election sometime, and you know that you have to go to the governor general to call the election, and therefore, you know, she or he, whoever our next governor general is going to be, will be in a conflict of interest. It's like, it's just paperwork. You go to Rideau Hall and you say, I want Parliament dissolved, and the governor general does it. So there's no conflict at all. But O'Toole is trying to say, because you picked the governor general, that governor general may call the election?
Yeah, refuse to dissolve Parliament and call an election?
Crown you king for life? What is the governor general going to do? The governor general has very limited constitutional powers when it comes to the calling of elections. They can't really put their thumb on the scale one way or the other and benefit. We've had a couple. Well, the big King Bing affair was about basically the same thing, which is offering to, in a minority situation, to the other party the opportunity to form a government. Constitutionally, that's kind of iffy. Generally, if the prime minister wants to dissolve Parliament and call an election, it gets done, whether you're a majority or a minority prime minister. So it's not like O'Toole is going to miss the opportunity to form the government because a governor general appointed by Trudeau is going to ignore their constitutional duty to call an election out of a favor to the person who appointed you for the next 5 years.
Well, it's not a favor if they're coming to you and saying, we want an election, and you decide not to have an election.
Yeah.
That's no favor.
You want the governor general to say, no, Mr. Prime Minister, you can't have a new election, but I am going to make O'Toole the prime minister instead. So how about that? It's like, yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. So the whole basis for O'Toole saying, no, you can't do it is ridiculous.
It's fallacious.
Yeah.
Is this furthering what we've seen from the Conservatives and unfortunately from the NDP leadership as well, which is statements which play upon Canadians' interest in fairness, at the same time playing upon their ignorance of how the system works to make, in this case, Erin O'Toole, seemed like he's a defender of something being egalitarian and being fair, you know, fair play, when in fact he's not making any sense procedurally.
Well, I'm not sure if they don't understand. I mean, both Erin O'Toole and Jagmeet Singh are lawyers, and you'd hope that they took, you know, it's probably, if I remember right, I think it is an elective course. It's optional at law school, constitutional law. But if you're in government, you should probably know a little bit about how the Canadian Constitution works and how it sets out the, what happens next is usually the question involved. And I see, people saying, well, the Governor General, because she resigned, she shouldn't get her pension. I'm like, well, as a lawyer myself, I don't know the answer to that question, but lawyers are great librarians. We can look stuff up. So the first thing I do is I go to the Governor General's Act, and Section 6 of the Governor General Act says that when a Governor General ceases to hold office, there shall be paid to him or her an annuity equal to, and they've got a formula for how much you get. It's when you cease to hold office. It doesn't say if you retire.
Well, it doesn't say what the circumstances
are. It's just when you stop being Governor General, and there's no reason given, you get your annuity, you get all your emoluments. But you've got people going around in politics who ought to know better saying, oh, we should deny her pension. It's like, the law says, maybe she shouldn't take it, but the law says she gets it. The law is there to tell you what you have to do, not what you should be doing.
Yeah, I think it's up to her to decide to take it or not take it. And if she decides to take it, it is something that she is entitled to according to the act. Again, this is playing on Canadians' ignorance of their own system and how it works and trying to make hay while the sun shines, while there's attention focused on a Trudeau appointed governor general who turned out to be a disappointment. Okay, maybe more like a disaster. They're going to keep hammering on these things. And vengeance is a very appealing gut level emotion for voters, and this notion that she was bad, so she should get nothing.
If I fired an employee for doing what she did, there'd be no severance. It's like, well, yeah, but the Governor General isn't your normal kind of employee. It's they have a particular, they have a contract, and that contract is actually a law. And at the end of the day, you got to follow the law. You have to change the law, but that wouldn't affect this Governor General. It would affect future Governors General. The other thing, everyone's freaking out, going, well, what do? We don't have a Governor General now.
And well, we like, do well, though.
Yeah, well, we don't actually have a Governor General.
We have acting.
The Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of Canada becomes the administrator of the office. Not even an acting Governor General, technically, until a Governor General is appointed by Her Majesty the Queen.
So somebody is fulfilling the functions.
Oh yeah, someone's signing the papers, and apparently it's fairly common too. There's stuff that needs to be done, and the Governor General may be on an extended tour of Europe or wherever, and laws still need to be signed, and the Chief Justice, Supreme Court comes in and signs them. It's just an administrative duty. At the end of the day. But the strangest thing is all the people who kept saying like, oh, the Governor General is just ceremonial and really serves no purpose, were the ones who were running around going like, what do we do? We've got no Governor General. It's like, well, you were the guys who said they were useless a second ago. Which one is it? Are they vital or are they useless?
Yeah, both.
Both. Yes. Both. Neither. I don't know.
I don't know, but I sure like the sound of my voice.
Yeah. And, I'll get somebody angry and then hit them up for a donation.
Well, I don't imagine that the office will be vacant for very long. I'm sure they've drawn up a short list, and I'm sure they're doing some psychographic profiling this time.
I'm sure they were drawing up names 6 months ago when this thing first started up, going like, if worse comes to worse, who, would we get? And you hope they pick someone who isn't, a trophy pony. Who doesn't look good on paper and sell well to the base, for their star power and celebrity, because those tend not to be great. You want someone who's a bit boring. It'd be great to have an Aboriginal Governor General. There are a number of Aboriginal Canadians who are of great stature and wisdom and experience and all that kind of thing. It would be. There's some names that are already being floated. I saw Kim Campbell being floated, and I think Kim Campbell would be great as a Governor General. But you need someone who is experienced and unflappable and likes people and being in the public eye, because that's what the job is.
Yeah, and Kim Campbell would be a good choice, but so would an Indigenous leader, which would be send a very good symbol. I mean, it doesn't give us clean drinking water for all Indigenous people, but it is a interesting symbol of the attempts to recognize and legitimize the leadership of First Nations. So yeah. We'll have, but again, that could be seen as something that is more for optics than for the function of the job. The function of the job is not that difficult, quite frankly. I would think that I would probably find it tedious, and that would be the biggest problem. But this is not a job that requires math tests on a regular basis or anything of that nature. It doesn't require you to fix a car.
No, it's not a lot of heavy lifting or ditch digging involved. I mean, you know, there's a lot of standing around and boring tea parties, but you know, the Governor General is the patron of a number of charities and so-called loyal societies the St. George Society and various other ones. So, you know, you go to you send greetings to people. You're responsible for the honors system. So our Chancellery of Honors, which is one of the bureaus in the Governor General's office, gives out the Order of Canada and is responsible for all the medals and commemoratives and that sort of thing on a regular basis. The Volunteer Medal, if there's a Jubilee Medal, it comes through that office at some point. And, and they're responsible for, Commander-in-Chief of the Armed Forces, which, no one's expecting them to, know how to fly an F-18 or anything. But, there's ceremonial duties as the Honorary Colonel-in-Chief of a bunch of regiments. It's a lot of going out and, literally showing the flag. Yeah. So it can be exhausting.
Well, it's exhausting because it's tedious. Mm-hmm. And, as anybody who's worked a job knows, especially anybody who's worked in retail, the time that you spend doing nothing is worse than the time that you spend doing something, because boredom is the great soul eater. And I can imagine that unless you're really, really taken with the ceremony and the pomp and circumstance, unless that really resonates with you and you love being a part of that, like you said, it's a lot of boring tea parties. And ones in which you have to watch every single thing that you say. You can't actually joke around, and you've got to be fairly austere.
Yeah, so, there's a dignity that comes with the office.
Yeah, I mean, this is not an office I would ever accept, which is a good thing because it'll never be offered to me.
Well, you and me both.
Yeah.
Although I did post, I do look good in a hat with a feather. So, I've got that going for me.
Well, so did Huggy Bear on Starsky and Hutch.
True.
Yeah, whole different hat with a feather.
I haven't seen him being touted as a future Governor General.
Well, no, he's not Canadian.
Not yet. No, he's not Canadian. Although I do see Bill Shatner, and I'm not sure that's a good fit either. As much as I love Star Trek and all the rest, I think he's watching his Twitter feed the last little while. He's getting a little crusty in his advancing years. I'm not sure he has the temperament to put up with the tedium that goes with the office.
Well, I also think that the role should go to somebody who's actually lived in Canada.
Well, yeah, there's that too.
Yeah, I think he made one movie in Canada, The Kidnapping of the President, around 1979, that they shot at Nathan Phillips Square. And I don't think he's done anything in Canada since then. Maybe some of those cheap syndicated shows that he's done that are on History Channel 2. Maybe those shot in Vancouver, for all I know.
Oh, he's been here for Comic-Con and some of the Star Trek conventions. So,
Yeah, well, that hardly counts as as working in Canada.
You sleeping at the Marriott doesn't count.
Yeah, not at all. All right, let's move from that topic to a discussion of Lynn Bayack, who stopped besmirching the office of a senator. She has said offensive things for some time, and everything just finally caught up with her. Why don't you fill us in?
Well, and this has been going on for quite a long, long time. I mean, she was appointed to the Senate in January 2013, so 8 years ago. And, you know, she's from Northern Ontario. You know, she had a car dealership, I think, with her husband before being chosen by Harper for the Senate.
Nothing like a car salesman to spiff up the place. And
seems to be a theme with conservatives. They seem to love them. Here, I want to make sure that I'm being absolutely. Yes, she co-owned a General Motors dealership and a Ford dealership with her late husband. You know, she's from Dryden, Ontario, and she ran in 95 and 99 as a provincial conservative in Fort Frances, Rainy River. And then Stephen Harper appointed her for some reason, and I'm not quite sure what the nexus was there, in 2013 to the Senate. And she was part of the 8-year crew, which comes into play later as kind of cover, you know, when Harper was appointing senators, because he found that he couldn't, under a reference to the Supreme Court of Canada, he couldn't reform the Senate unilaterally, and he needed the approval of the provinces and a bunch of other stuff. He decided, oh, you know, I'm just going to appoint a bunch of senators and make them promise that they will only serve for 8 years. All those senators are age 75. And they're really, really hard to get rid of too, generally. And so her 8 years actually was up in January, but, you know, and she wrote this long letter where she apologized for absolutely nothing, because her senatorship was characterized by being antagonistic of the Indigenous people. She said that the residential schools were actually, you know, pretty good and did a lot of good out there. And when she was called out on that, she published on her Senate website all kinds of letters in support of her, calling, you know, Aboriginals lazy and entitled, and, you know, tax scroungers, and all kinds of other good things. And that's when she got in trouble with the Senate the first time, because she said these terrible things, and then she put them up on her website, which is run by the Government of Canada, by the Senate, and then she refused to apologize. And then when she did finally kind of apologize, they said, well, you got to go to sensitivity training. And she went to sensitivity training. And apparently on her very first day, she claimed that she was Aboriginal herself. Because someone in her family had adopted an Aboriginal child at some point.
That makes her Aboriginal.
And therefore she's one too. And then she called out the person who was running it as looking way too white to be Aboriginal. And it just sort of, the wheels just fell right off.
I wonder if she tried to apply for a status card.
Oh my God. It just got worse and worse. She seemed to have this unfortunate blind spot when it came to dealings with our Indigenous population. She was very firm in those. And on her way out, you know, she wrote this letter about, you know, she's leaving after 8 years, and she doubled or maybe even tripled down on this. And she said, you know, and I'm being pilloried for a free speech person. And I said a bunch of stuff that, you know, I apologize for the tie, but I take back the apology because I really meant it. And it's all true. It's like, oh, just, if you're going, just go. Just please leave. And the prorogation of parliament, she was in the process of, you know, she had been suspended from the Senate for refusing to take down the letters and refusing to apologize. And then when prorogation happened, it derails all of the committees, and all the rest were across Parliament, Senate, and the House of Commons. And so her, you know, disciplinary hearing basically before the Senate was stopped, and they would have to restart it again. So she got back in the Senate, she started getting paid again, and someone just said, you know what, we're bringing this all back on. So it really looked like it was coming to a head over that. And the other thing she did, you know, if that's not enough,
but wait there's more.
She, you know, she made a donation, I think it was like $300 to Donald Trump, to the Trump campaign in the last election. You know, 300 US, I mean, like real money, not 300 Canadian. Now, she made a donation to the Republican National Committee in support of Trump's re-election campaign. And she listed her residence on the donation form as Dryden, New York. Now, she's from Dryden, Ontario. And
I don't even know if there is a Dryden, New York.
I don't know. And she listed her occupation as retired, which, you know, technically now is correct.
Yeah.
but at the time, she was a Canadian senator. And the American Election Campaign Act doesn't allow foreign nationals without American citizenship or permanent residency to contribute to political campaigns. So she broke American election law. And then, you know, her office said, oh, you know, that was an error. It's like, yeah, I filled in these four very specific questions completely wrong as just a simple mistake.
Yeah, I confused Ontario with New York. As yeah. Who doesn't?
As one does. Because
especially, you know, Dryden.
You know, well, and New York State does, you know, is very, very similar to Northern Ontario. So, you know, it's
yeah.
Not that I don't love both of those.
She's, she's thoroughly reprehensible as a human being. I think it's fair to say at this point, she is a reprehensible human being.
Well, let's just say she's hard to love.
I'll stick with reprehensible. Okay. You can stay with hard to love. Yeah. It just makes me, I mean, is there a means in the Senate to actually get rid of a senator? Is the worst they can do suspend them?
Well, it's never really been tested. I mean, they've suspended, and you know, there's a bunch of famous suspensions. I mean, Duffy, Pamela Wallin,
Brazeau, I believe, was suspended.
Yeah, Patrick Brazeau was suspended for you know, either bad or allegedly bad activities, you know, violating, you know, all kinds of rules about Senate expenses, you know, getting, you know, in Patrick Brazeau's case, you know, he was arrested under, you know, very sad circumstances, and it was like bringing disrepute to the Senate. Generally, what they do is they cut you off from your money and your office, and they publicly humiliate you enough that you finally quit. And that's what has happened. Before the era of no shame, people used to, you know, resign from the Senate over scandals. And, you know, no one resigns over scandals anymore because, you know, shame doesn't exist anymore.
No, shame is so 2016.
Yeah. But I think, you know, Beck was probably going to be one of the rare people they were going to actually vote to kick out of the Senate. You know, and there's a whole process, you know, I've written about it somewhere, you know, about, you know, who you have to go to, and, you know, because senators are appointed for life, you know, and it can be hard to get rid of them. But it looked like the Senate was getting really serious about getting rid of her. So she said, oh, guess what? My 8 years is up. I'm leaving. And, you know, and here's a couple of firecrackers I'm going to throw in the door on the way out.
Yeah, she sure stunk the place up on her way out. And a person like that, the Senate is supposed to provide a sober second look at legislation. Excuse me, I got a frog in my throat again. Ribbit. It's supposed to provide some sense of wise sage advice, some you know, non-partisan oversight, and point out weaknesses in potential legislation. I don't think, based on her comportment, that somebody of her character has the temperament or the intelligence to be able to actually provide what is needed of a senator, that being a sober second look. I think that she's an intellectual lightweight, a moral lightweight. And why should she? I mean, it makes me question how many other senators are there? I know a couple of them. How many other senators are there that really don't really have the character or temperament to be deciding, you know, the merits of proposed legislation? It's a scary thought, because you want these people to be thinkers and wise folks and people given to moderation and reason. And then you got her. And it makes me afraid that the Senate can't do what it's supposed to do when it has people like that in it.
It's a lot of these Senate appointments, you really scratch your head. And there's been good and there's been bad senators all through Canadian history of sure. All parties. You know, if you look it up, you know, some of them are just kind of sad, and a lot of them are financial misdealings you know, some senators got, you know, get the appointment and relying on the fact that it is really hard to get rid of a senator. they just coast. They just do nothing. They use it just basically as a way to, you know, it's a sinecure. You know, I get a check and I get an office and I get to call myself senator, but I'm not going to do any work and nobody can force me to do any work. And you know, a lot of that is true. I mean, so you need to be appointing people who are genuinely committed to, you know, the legislative function of the Senate, people who are have a little bit of wisdom, a little bit of experience, a little bit of knowledge in their given fields, you know, and you hope decent people too. But, you know, particularly under the Harper years, there were a lot of terrible senators appointed. You know, some of them have had to leave. Meredith.
Meredith?
Yeah, and, you know, he left under... such a cloud. He's a former Pentecostal minister. He ended up he wasn't booted, because we don't boot
senators. He was involved in some way with
harassment with one of his parishioners, and
she, if I remember correctly, she was young.
Yes. Yeah. And that, and it just, it was a teenager, and she hasn't been named. She's referred to in all the court documents as, or the all the reports as Miss M, because there was an inquiry. Yeah. And at the Senate Ethics Office, this was back in early 2016, you know, found him guilty of ethics violations after he conceded that that he had had sex with her, but only after she turned 18. He was grooming her for
well, it was years before that. The creepy that came off of that was just, not a lot of vetting, though. You know, often you see the bona fides of somebody who's a man of the cloth, who's active in his community and in charities. And again, like with Julie Payette, you think these optics are great, but you really don't know somebody.
You got to look under the hood.
Yeah, and maybe sometimes looking under the hood won't show anything, because what's under the hood is actually in the trunk. And you're looking in the wrong place, or it's been so well hidden that there may be some senators who have skeletons in their closet and the skeletons stay in their closet. But it just seems that, I mean, the Harper vetting process was, it was disturbing to me to see two journalists rewarded with Senate seats, because then it makes me question their objectivity when they were journalists. It calls into question what they did before in their profession if they're getting rewarded by a conservative prime minister. And I would feel the same way if it was a liberal prime minister, or in some dreamland, an NDP prime minister, rewarding journalists. I just don't think journalists... I think journalism is a fine calling and fulfills an important role in society. So I can see that a journalist meriting being a senator as far as their contribution to Canadian society. But at the same time, the optics, unless you appoint to the Senate somebody who has notably been critical of you, it just seems like payoff for good coverage all those years. And that's unseemly for the upper chamber.
Yeah. And one of the problems, I think, you know, Harper wanted to pass legislation. So what he did is he appointed extreme party loyalists to the Senate, you know, people who would put their hand up when his legislation came through there. So it really was the triumph of partisanship. And the Senate before that had been partisan, it wasn't so nakedly partisan. Mulroney was pretty partisan with his appointments as well. You know, generally, you know, the rule was, you know, you appointed a good number of people who, it was a place where you rewarded friends. So, you know, and they tended to be people who supported you politically. So you appointed, you know, maybe, you know, half of your appointments would be partisan. And then, half of that half, or two thirds of the remaining half, would be, prominent citizens who no one would have any problem with, and you'd throw one or two seats to the opposition party when those people were no longer in any position to do you any harm. So he always threw a few things to the other party just because that was the rule, and no one wanted to be frozen out entirely. And Harper particularly decided, nope, screw that. It's going to be just my people, and I don't care if it's a yellow dog from Alberta. As long as they put their paw up when it comes to passing my agenda, then they're good enough for me to be a senator. And so you ended up getting all of these people who were fiercely loyal and fiercely partisan, but not particularly qualified, not great records of civic involvement outside of politics. Some of them were important in their communities, but they were specifically chosen to be sort of the Trojan horse that gets you into a community of voters that you really need to court. Mm-hmm. You can trot them out and say, hey, look, I love you, nationality or religion or whatever, because look, this guy, I made this guy or this woman a senator, and he or she's one of you, so therefore you ought to be voting for me. And it was really pretty much that naked. And as a result, bad decisions, bad senators. I say, when Meredith, if you're having a 2-year affair with a teenager that starts when they're 16 and you're videotaping yourself in compromising positions, you're webcasting from your Senate office. It's like, that's pretty poor vetting.
It just goes to show the sense of invulnerability and entitlement some senators have, that you'd think that somebody who's up to something like that would have the sense, the wisdom to keep that secret, at least. And the fact that they, he flew like Icarus too close to the sun, it shows that they just don't think anything can happen to them. And certainly, again, this comes back to my concern about senators who don't seem to have the decision-making ability that I would like them to have. And yeah. I wonder how many others are in that same boat. I wonder how much of our legislation is being looked at by people who don't have the perspicacity to be doing so.
Yeah, and I think, and I worked for a senator, like 35 years ago, worked in the Senate office up in Ottawa. And, he was actually a cabinet minister at that time too. So, he had sort of double duty. And I came to appreciate the Senate does all kinds of important work. I mean, it fine tunes legislation, it raises questions, it makes legislation better. It does inquiries, it does all kinds of stuff that the Canadian, again, the level of knowledge of our parliamentary system is sometimes pretty sad. And especially, when it comes to the Senate, because the Senate isn't very, there's no elections and it's not really that sexy. It's really just, you only pay attention to it when there's a scandal. And the Senate performs, I still think, a very useful service. And there are some good senators, and they end up doing pretty much all the heavy lifting because they chair the committees. They're the ones who are there debating the legislation and talking to their counterparts in the House of Commons about how things can move better. In a nonpartisan, non-aligned, non-party system, Senate, things are a little bit more complicated now, and they're still evolving. But the Senate does good stuff. But again, an institution's only as good as the people who you appoint to it. And it's not just, the Senate wasn't designed to be representative of all people, like ordinary Canadians kind of thing. I mean, it really was patterned after the House of Lords. There was sort of an elitism to it originally. And it was for older, white men at one point. It still, looks a lot that way. And it was designed that way purposefully to sort of put the brakes on the House of Commons if they wanted to do anything really crazy and stupid. But it kind of evolved into more of a, kind of a wise uncle who gives you advice. It'll be interesting to see how the reforms to the Senate, whether they hold after the Liberal government, finally gives way to another government, whether it's a Conservative or NDP or whatever comes after, Trudeau or whoever comes after Trudeau, whether or not it goes back to being a partisan operation again, and whether it works better or worse, I think it's working actually pretty well right now. But it's not really in the public eye until there's a problem, there's one fewer problems with the Senate now. Senator Beck has decided to resign.
Well, listen, she's the devil, you know. You never know who's going to come in.
Yeah, well, and the appointment process is a little bit opaque as well. There is a committee, and it's hard to know what they're looking for particularly. You hope they're looking for people with a bit of a background and a little bit of a civic life and
decency, common sense, good judgment.
Yeah, that would be
a history of good judgment.
That would be good.
Wouldn't that be refreshing? Well, goodbye to Lynn Bayak. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. The Senate is a sticking point for many Canadians. So many Canadians don't understand the work that it does. So they say it should be abolished because Canadians, once again, sense of Canadian fair play. We don't like the idea that somebody gets appointed to sit in a position of authority. Judges do it. And we don't seem to have any trouble with judges. I think we understand the efficacy of having judges appointed rather than elected, which is an American system that, to me, I don't know how anybody thinks justice is the product of a system of popularity. But a lot of Canadians have a real problem with the continued existence of the Senate. They think that it's antiquated and outdated. And that, again, falls to a failing to educate Canadians in primary school or in high school about the importance and functions of our institutions. And maybe that's something to talk about in another show. So we should end this show so we can do another show.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting the next little while, especially if there's an election coming. Then that's generally when there's a few appointments being made, and to do a little bit of house cleaning. So the Senate, they say it's going to be interesting to see how it evolves in the next little while, how it's reinventing itself.
Yeah, I would say that if you're somebody who tends to get involved as a volunteer in elections, don't make too many plans for the fall. And that's it, Stephen. I want to thank you for once again contributing to our increased knowledge of all things that we discuss.
Oh, well, I love chatting. You and I get to think about a lot of interesting things.
And people seem to find them interesting. So I'm glad we can help. Don't forget that we now do two shows a week. So you're getting this show. Well, this show is released on Tuesday and the other show was released on Thursday. So keep an eye out for that. If you're listening to this another time, just keep in mind that there's another show you can listen to following this one. And that's it for Stephen Lawton's. I'm Stephen Kersner, and this has been Stephen and Stephen on the Fun Network.